From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It happens in all religions. You have people who don't accept everything about the doctrine or the rules, but just enough to stick around. A lot of it is circumstance. They stay for family members or because of peer pressure. Some stay because the good parts outweigh the not so good. Others are just determined to live the religion on their own terms. There's a name for this kind of person in Catholicism, for example. They're called cafeteria Catholics. But Mormons have their own version, and today in the program, we're talking about it. There are different names. New Order Mormons is one of them. Observers believe it's a growing movement. We'll ask today where they fit in a church so defined by one way of believing. We hope you'll join us after the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we hope you'll consider joining them. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. Visit us online at KUER.org for details. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. I read this week what is apparently a favorite story by a Mormon leader that may help set up today's program. He told of a mother who was talking to her child about who had fallen out of bed, and she asked him how. The answer is the punchline, because I wasn't in far enough. Now, this leader used the story to explain why he thought most people had decided to leave the LDS Church, because he said they were not in far enough. But of course, like all religions, Mormonism has people in various stages of participation and belief. We recently learned about one group in particular known as New Order Mormons. They actually go by other names too, like Progressive Mormons, Uncorrelated Mormons, whatever that means. And they're not all alike, but basically they're people who don't believe all parts of the LDS story or doctrine, but they've decided to stay, at least for now. And today in the program, we're talking about this strain of Mormonism, how it fits in a very orthodox, very structured church. We invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Do you count yourself a New Order Mormon or any of the other terms I mentioned? And what's the good part of Mormonism? What's the not-so-good part? And what does it mean for the way you live your religious life? Finally, if you don't buy into the dogma, what is the point of staying? Again, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. With us throughout the hour is John DeLynn. He's co-founder of the website StayLDS.com, also creator and a host of Mormon Stories. It's a podcast that looks at faith and culture. We should mention he's finishing a doctorate in psychology at Utah State University. He's planning to go into private practice next year with a focus on religion and mental health issues. And John DeLynn, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug. Great to be back.
So I guess I want to start by let's get you oriented in this discussion where you fit so we can, explain it as we go along. You've described yourself as a reconstructed believer. Still a believer, but reconstructed. What do you mean?
You know, one thing I know for sure, and that's that beliefs just keep changing, and that's true for me as well. I'd say my beliefs are very unstructured and loose at this point. I'm not sure that there's a God or an afterlife. There may be. I kind of hope that there is. I sometimes feel influence or support that I can't explain. And I really want to believe that there's a meaning and purpose in this life, maybe even one that's grander than we construct ourselves. And I guess I lump all that into something and I call it God.
Right.
But whether he or she has 10 fingers or 10 toes, I have no idea. If I were to die and find out the answer and to be told there's no afterlife, I'd kind of say, yeah, I kind of figured. But I choose to live as a believer, and it's a choice.
What do you mean, believer?
It's just that. It's that
you choose to live as a believer in what?
In something.
But you choose to live as a Mormon.
Yeah. And Mormonism is my heritage. I'm 5-6 generations into it. And
is that why in part?
That's part.
With circumstance. I was born here. All the, you know, when I go to the family reunions, we get the same lingo. That's a good part of it.
Yeah. I've had strong positive experiences. The church was a very important part of my formative years. My children still attend. My wife attends with me when we attend with our children. My siblings are all active. My parents are active. And I love so much about this tradition. So I could go on for the full hour about all the things I love, but there are also things that really I struggle with,
yeah,
too.
Well, yeah. I want to talk about both of those elements, obviously, because it's an important part of the conversation. But let's define some terms here. New Order Mormon. What is a New Order Mormon or an uncorrelated Mormon or a liberal Mormon or a progressive Mormon? They all fit in this category?
Well, it's a very, as you mentioned in the intro, it's a very broad category. There's as many different types of being a Mormon as there are Mormons. I don't know anyone who actually likes the term New Order Mormon. It's just it started out as an internet discussion group and it evolved into a website and now a support group that some man created 10 or 15 years ago. I never met this person. I just happened to find New Order Mormon when I worked at Microsoft and was trying to find people like me. So I don't identify as a New Order Mormon.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's referred to as NOM, N-O-M for short. But New Order Mormons they're basically saying exactly what we've already talked about, which is that they either have to stay for family or social reasons, or they want to stay for spiritual or social or pragmatic reasons, sometimes even spiritual reasons.
Sure.
And
they're kind of all over the map.
And they're either unorthodox in their practice or unorthodox in their belief or unorthoprax in their practice or both.
Right.
And they just need to find support.
You have any clue at all how many we're talking about within Mormonism, say?
Well, you know, in terms of how many actually hang out on the New Order Mormon website, it's probably in the range of thousands. Over the years, it's probably been tens of thousands, but sometimes that's a transitionary kind of state. I did a back-of-the-envelope estimate of how many sort of people like me there might be. Hmm. If there's, let's just say, 3 to 5 in every ward, let's say there's about 10,000 U.S. wards, it ends up being about 1 to 2% of the active church population. 2/3 of all those who've been baptized Mormon across the world no longer attend. Many of those don't even identify as Mormon. But I'd say it's somewhere between 2 to 3% of the active Mormons, at least in the U.S. I have no idea to what extent we exist in Latin America or Philippines, yeah, or Africa, because there are just different social structures there.
So is that significant? You know, or is this a kind of a fringe fraction? I mean, I guess the idea is your sense of it is that in some way it's growing. Is that your sense of it?
I think it's growing, but I think it's growing within a narrow band.
Huh.
I think over half of the active members of the church are never going to be interested or even open to the idea of entertaining anything that's outside of what's been correlated for them. They're worried about their job. They're worried about their marriage, their next payment, just getting by. And maybe they're not interested or curious about some of the intellectual or social issues that kind of grab people like us. You know, there's also another band of very thoughtful, committed Mormons that are at least curious or have the luxury or the privilege of entertaining some of the questions, because really – doubt and skepticism can be a privilege. If you're a single mother in Chicago raising a kid, you don't have the luxury of asking whether the Book of Abraham is historical. You're just trying to like make your next meal. So I think there's this narrow band of sort of privileged LDS church members who are willing to ask these questions. But I think it's a very small group who are even candidates. They have to have a certain socioeconomic status, a certain intelligence level, a certain level of curiosity. Mm-hmm. A commitment to integrity and truth, and the luxury and the time and the risk balance to be able to sort of ask that question, what if it's not really true? And it takes a lot to get there. And so while I see it's growing significantly, I think it's going to be capped growth. It's not going to be the full membership anytime soon.
Here's an email. This comes from well, there's not a name associated with it. I have no idea what this name means. I am fully active Mormon and an agnostic. I believe the LDS Church is mostly true, this person writes. However, it's just the parts about Joseph Smith and angels and afterlife and God existing that are probably not. And I know that sounds glib, he writes, but I think the heart of the Mormon Church and its real strength is in the members themselves, not some external force. The support, the fellowship, and the love that most people find there is very real, even if the other parts may not be. Does that resonate with what you hear, your own kind of experience, John DeLynn?
Yeah, we are, as I learned in psychology, we are social creatures. There's probably nothing more significant than being a member of a church for the social benefits. And sometimes people speak derisively of that, like, oh, they're just a social Mormon. But the truth is, social connections are tied to all sorts of psychological and physical well-being. And so I think that's a very legitimate reason to be a member of any religious tradition. The field of psychology validates religious participation as being healthy and good for most people. And I think that really is at the core of why most people are members, whether they're progressive or newer or Mormon or just faithful.
Because you do seem to bristle a little bit about this idea that did come up for me, I have to say, and that is, what is exactly the level of passion or commitment for these people on this blog for Mormons in this category, or this website anyway, the support group you were mentioning for New Order Mormons? One of the people took exception to our description of New Order Mormons on our website as people who stay because they love the culture or feel spiritually nourished. That's what we had written. But this person said, we're just half in and half out for the sake of our spouses. So a lot of this is just about circumstance. They don't, on some level, perhaps even dare because they're in a neighborhood of Mormons or because family, you know, mom and dad wouldn't understand it. So they're not entirely committed to this idea of being New Order Mormons. They're committed. They're not really committed to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And the participants at the stayLDS.com website and forum wanted me to differentiate between them and the New Order Mormons.
Now explain what you're talking about. StayLDS.com is your website that you are involved with.
Yeah, I created that as a support system for those who wanted to stay but needed support.
And there's a difference between that and this New Order Mormon group.
Maybe a little bit. I think the New Order Mormons basically some of the – and there's all types in all places, but a lot of bleed over. But New Order Mormons, there's a good chunk of them that are here because they feel forced to. StayLDS sort of feels a little bit different in the sense that they actually want to. And again, it's generalizing, but that's the big difference between those two support groups, I'd say.
Do they really care if the church changes some of these people? I mean, isn't part of being a New Order Mormon an acknowledgement of just the fact, look, this is what it is. This is the way they believe. So I take the good stuff, shrug off the not so good stuff, which seems like a kind of passive way of living. But is that where some of them are? It's like, I'm not going to change anything. Like, you're an activist. I think you would call yourself that on some levels. But a lot of New Order Mormons don't seem like that. They're just, look, this is where I situate. It's nice to go on a website every once in a while. I'm not going to say who I am. And it was hard to find any actual names, by the way, on that website. They're all really anonymous for the most part.
That's right.
Is that where we are sort of in that way?
You know, I think, again, there's a variety, but there's so much at risk. You know, you can lose your marriage. You can lose your children. You can lose the esteem of your parents or your siblings. Sometimes you can lose your job. And those are not trivial matters. So many of them are angry or hostile, and some of them would probably characterize their desire as having the church – wanting the church to be destroyed. That's a minority.
Sure.
That's some of them. Some of them are just here out of obligation. But some of them feel like it's their mission to help make the church better, and you'll probably get more of those people on the stayLDS.com website. But they bleed over again, and there certainly is a minority that feel like either one of two things. Either they love the church and they want to make it better, or they love the Mormons in the church and they want to make it better experiences for them because they care about the people who are in it day to day.
One poster wrote this, I am not a New Order Mormon because if these folks knew that I didn't believe, I would be turned out of my community.
Yeah, happens all the time. I get emails every week from people whose marriages are in jeopardy, who are being ostracized from their parents or their ward community. It's real pain and it's real distress. There's actually a psychological term for it called spiritual struggles. But struggling with the religious tradition like Mormonism has been associated with depression and anxiety and many of the major disorders in the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual. It's a real thing. And people have a right to want to be anonymous or to be scared or to be tentative or to be angry because there's so much pain and suffering out there. But it's not all stark. These people love each other. They get together. They meet in coffee clubs or in restaurants in Salt Lake and in Draper and in Portland and Seattle and all over the world, really. And they love their friendships. They forge lasting friendships. And they really provide each other needed support. And I think that's a beautiful part of what's going on.
Let's take a call. Jim is with us in Salt Lake City. Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Doug.
Sure.
I've got so much here I'd like to talk about, I know.
Pick one thing out of the nine.
I like the term non-correlated Mormon best of all. I believe in the religion that Joseph Smith wanted to start. He talked about visions and angels and seeing God and all this stuff that we no longer talk about. We neglect it to a point that it's sickening. And I know John's familiar with people like Rock Waterman and things of that people like that that want to go back to their roots. And it's a wonderful, wonderful experience when you finally get out of the box and look back at what he tried to do. I finally got to the point where, and we were just discussing where, I've written a letter to my stake president, and I was candid but very nice, and I'm willing now to take whatever consequences come. I've talked to my wife about it, and she's she's a little scared. But,
well, let me stop you for just a moment because this sounds to me, John DeLynn, this sounds to me like more a kind of, maybe forgive the term, but a fundamentalist perspective than it does the kind of brand of New Order Mormon we're talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of like uncorrelated Mormons fall on either side of the middle. If the middle is correlation, and let's just say the left are the New Order Mormons that we've been talking about, there's sort of this almost neo-fundamentalist group on the right. Rock Waterman blogs in a blog called Pure Mormonism. Denver Snuffer is a local attorney who has a very large following. He's written several books.
Do they believe in polygamy?
No, and that's where the fundamentalism term kind of fails. It's just like Jim said, they believe that Joseph got it right, that the Book of Mormon got it right, and things started to fall apart as soon as the church kind of got corporatized and structured. Maybe some of the Nauvoo stuff is a little wacky. Mm-hmm. Some of them may believe in polygamy, but mostly they believe that it's about your connection with God, your connection with the Savior, that the church and the Book of Mormon are just vehicles to bring you closer to Christ, maybe even help you see Christ, which is something Denver Snuffer has claimed to have done. And these people just, they feel vitalized when they read the Book of Mormon, but they feel like the current church has gone astray.
Huh.
But they're not polygamists, you know, in southern Utah.
No,
they're in mainstream middle-class wards all throughout the country.
So the other type of New Order Mormon, I'm guessing... Well, let me back up because I want to get a sense of historical perspective because this is something you've written about. This goes back. You've mentioned, I guess, what seems to be a fairly influential essay written by a man by the name of Richard Paul. This was in 1980. He wrote this essay called "What the Church Means to People Like Me." And in it, he wrote, "I represent a type of Latter-day Saint which is found in almost every ward and branch in the church." Now, this was in 1980. Was this the first sort of official kind of inkling of this movement that we're talking about today?
Not quite, but it was a very important one. There are some other things that come earlier, but this is certainly one of the milestone landmarks in sort of alternative Mormonism for me.
Paul's thesis was that there are these two distinct types of active and dedicated Mormons. He wrote that he wasn't talking about good Mormons or Jack Mormons. You often hear that term, at least around here. He said he was talking about two types of involved church members. They were committed to the church, but they also had their misgivings. So people who are in, but they don't believe everything. They have some doubts about particular kinds of things. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, or they see things differently than maybe the brethren do or the mainstream culture does. Yeah. And maybe they view things less literally. Maybe, you know, maybe they don't think the earth is 7,000 years old like the Doctrine and Covenants section 77 says. Maybe they don't believe in polygamy like Doctrine and Covenants 132 says. Maybe, you know, maybe they don't agree with the church's position on gays and lesbians and bisexual people or the messages about race both in the Book of Mormon and in the church's past. And so they see the church as good, maybe even inspired, but they've got a problem with some of its history, some of its doctrine, maybe some of its social stances. And really, they're free thinkers. And oftentimes, they value science. They value skepticism. They often value the question more than the answer. Mm-hmm. And but they still value their heritage and their culture and spirituality. And so it's that's how I would characterize the Liahona type that Richard Paul talks about, which is to be contrasted with the Iron Rod type.
Yeah. Which is a reference to a Book of Mormon symbolism.
Right.
You've made this connection to what Judaism went through years and years ago, a kind of reformation, where now you hear of people who participate in congregations, you know, Reformed Judaism. Is there a similar connection here? Are we talking about Reformed Mormonism in some level?
That's a great question, and I've thought a lot about that. I've read a lot of books by Chaim Potok who tried to chronicle Judaism's confrontation with modernity. And, you know, it's ironic that Reformed Judaism is the largest branch of Judaism now in the United States. 600, I think, 1,000 members. You could be a rabbi and be an atheist. You know, female rabbis, same-sex marriage. It's a beautiful thing. I've shopped this idea around not because I want to promote it, but just because I'm curious whether there's any interest there. And I've sort of confronted a couple concerns. One is that there's a question about whether Mormonism, which has at best, you know, a little less than 200 years of existence, whether the deep cultural, ethnic, racial ties that bind us are as strong as those racial and ethnic and cultural ties that bind Jews who have been around for over 2,000 years, maybe 3,000 years. There's an order of magnitude difference in level of culture and depth and race there. And so that's one question. But then another big question is so many Mormons, you know, Judaism, I'm not sure if Judaism had the same levels of literality that Mormonism did. I'm sure that it did at some point.
In their dogma.
Yeah. But there's so many Mormons, and Joseph Smith was so relatively recent, and the church is so relatively young. There are many struggling Mormons that I talk to who say, look, if it's a fraud, I don't want anything to do with it. And so they kind of think about a Reformed Mormonism idea as building a house on sand, on a foundation of sand. It's like, if the foundation isn't granite, then let's not build there. Let's go somewhere else. And so they often lose their taste for religion altogether. And the study that we did on whymormonsquestion.org showed that over 50% of these types of people who leave the church become either atheist or agnostic and don't reaffiliate with other religious traditions. So I don't know if a Reformed Mormonism will spring out. I'd hate to see schisms. I'd hate to see the church split apart. It's hard to see that happening because the church has such a control. And I know the Community of Christ is very interested. You had John Hamer on just a few weeks ago.
Used to be the Reformed LDS Church.
Used to be the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I know they're interested in presenting themselves as a progressive form of Mormonism. But whether that's going to take hold is a big question.
I want to get to as many calls as we can today, but let's take a break first. We have with us John DeLynn, co-founder of the website StayLDS.com and creator and one of the hosts of the Mormon Stories podcast. We'll put links to that on our website. Our number, 801-585-WEST. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, we're talking about New Order Mormons, which is not a very big group, at least not yet. But those within it say it's a growing movement of Latter-day Saints who are trying to carve out a space for themselves within the LDS Church. We're talking about this strain of Mormonism today, and we invite you to join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We have with us throughout the hour John DeLynn, co-founder of the website StayLDS.com, creator and one of the hosts of the Mormon Stories podcast. Let's go back to the phones. Jason is with us, calling from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Jason, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about myself. I served a mission and got married in the LDS temple and was very active in my ward and in leadership callings. And about the time when I started having my family with young kids, I started reading a little bit more about LDS history and found that it was the narrative that I had been taught growing up for the first 30 years of my life was very different than there were a lot of details that were intentionally, I feel, left out, or I felt kind of misled in a way. And so that caused me to kind of go down this road of becoming a little bit more liberal in my thoughts and trusting my own judgment on things rather than deferring to the church.
Yeah, I guess this is... But let me ask you this, because this is a question I want to put to you as well, John DeLynn. Jason in Cape Cod, what's the deal breaker for you? You know, when is the point when you disconnect entirely? Or is there? Do you know where that point is?
I don't know if there is a deal breaker right now. I have my wife's family and my family are in the church. And like many in my position, we like to maintain those bonds, those family bonds and friendships. And not that I have, and when I first started doubting some of the truth claims of the church, I was quiet about it because I thought, well, maybe I'll find more information that will solve these issues for me. But as I kept reading, it just got worse and worse. But over time, I felt more comfortable with coming out and being a little bit more open with people about how I really feel on issues.
I keep hearing that term.
But I haven't separated myself yet,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think I will.
I keep hearing that term coming out, John DeLynn, which is ironic, you know. A lot of times it's referred to coming out of the closet if you're gay. But is there a point? Talk to what Jason was saying. I wanted you to talk about that. But is there that point when you sort of ease out and start to mention your concerns to the people the closer to you?
Yeah, it's really a question of pain threshold. Once you're sort of out of the box and you don't see things in that correlated way, then you start experiencing cognitive dissonance. You start having emotions and thoughts that are very different, very, very different from the prevailing culture and the prevailing messages. And it's just a matter of how long you can stay silent. And at some point, people snap and they feel like to be congruent with themselves, to be honest, to be authentic, they need to start sharing. And then they start slowly talking to loved ones and then it goes from there. Yeah. Some people can go decades without ever mentioning anything. I'm not that type of person. So yeah, coming out, it's a real significant – I think it's almost an identical parallel with being LGBT, not to minimize being LGBT. No. I deeply care about that issue as well. But for me, it's equally traumatic and sometimes even more traumatic. I've talked to gay and lesbian people who have told me coming out to my parents about my disbelief in the church was far worse than coming out to them as gay or lesbian.
Wow. Here's an email from Ben who writes, I'm not Mormon, but when I hear about the common problems that arise when someone comes out as a New Order Mormon or whatever you want to call it, it makes me wonder less about those who are coming out than about what those problems say about the church itself. What is it, he writes, about Mormonism that makes so much trouble for people struggling with belief? I mean, many religions create space for all kinds of belief and participation. He says, I went to Catholic school my entire education, and I don't believe, in quotes, anymore, but I can still call myself Catholic. My believing family will still love me, and I could go and get communion tomorrow in the cathedral if I wanted to. So what Ben is saying is, what's the diff?
I think the secret sauce of Mormonism in many ways, at least historically, has been the patriarchy, the top-down control, the correlation, as it were. It's almost like McDonald's. You want to have that same hamburger experience and those same tasty fries, for those who like McDonald's, whether you're in Hong Kong or Beijing or Cincinnati. And so, you know, the brethren expect a lot, and they and the beliefs are firm. And I think that's what keeps a lot of people in. And I think the moment that they start weakening and becoming mamby-pamby about beliefs and commitment, I think it's a day the church becomes weaker. And so I don't envy the brethren who want to accommodate potentially modern sensibilities, but realize that if they do, the ship might break apart.
Wow. That's rough.
Yeah, I think it's a very hard place to be.
Let's go back to the phones. Tim is with us in Salt Lake. Tim, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
You know, my thought is, and by the way, John, I really appreciate your efforts and what you're doing. I was raised LDS, went on a mission, married in the temple, what have you. Very similar story as everyone else. But what I'm finding is all of this non-Mormon or New Order Mormon or non-correlated versus correlated, all of this stuff, to me, for anyone who at least used to take religion seriously, you know, the idea of going to an exaltation of some kind, it's kind of like the difference between throwing frogs into a pot of boiling water versus slowly, you know, having them already in the water and slowly warming it up. The end result is still based on the fact that, from my point of view, I feel like the LDS church is now based not so much on religious beliefs as it is on some sort of social intimidation.
Hmm. John DeLynn, what do you think? You hear that a lot, I guess.
I think I have a lot of sympathies with Tim's concern. And I think what I hear behind what he's saying is, if the church isn't what it claims to be, let's get these people out of there because it can hurt people. And I have sympathies with that, and I feel that way sometimes myself. At the same time, you know, you've had Alain de Botton on the show, and you know, he's a ardent atheist, and he still sees the value of what religious institutions provide: community, music, art, you know, spirituality, moral support, support for families. I don't think those are trivial things, and society hasn't yet figured out in a secular way how to replace what the good things that religion provides. And until secular people, these hardcore atheists, are able to provide something like that, I think people are going to still say, well, I don't love what I'm in, but it's still providing me with enough good that I'm going to stick with it. Now, of course, there's a ton of people who just leave and have very happy lives by leaving it.
Yeah.
But the fact that people are choosing to say is part coercion, but I think it's also part they see some value there. So it's a tough thing, but certainly there are people who leave the church and find a lot of joy. So it's a very personal decision.
One of the posters explained that they were a cafeteria Mormon on a hunger strike. Now, you yourself you've called yourself a proud card-carrying cafeteria Mormon. What does that mean? And what's the boundary?
Well, the boundary for me might be different than the boundary for President Packer or President Ballard, but Elder Ballard. But what do you mean?
What's the point at which you won't be, you know, how much are your local leaders going to tolerate you being, okay, he's here twice a you told us you go twice a month or something like that to church, right?
Yep.
So what's the point when they're like, dude, you're not a Mormon anymore?
Mm-hmm. Well,
active Mormon in any way. You call yourself you're proud of this distinction that you can, I'm sort of taking what I want right now. But at what point is that going to be unacceptable for your leadership, I guess, is the point. How much will they tolerate?
Yeah, I mean, it's super hard for me. Now, I have to be careful because, you know, there are lots of people thinking about what to do with their lives. I'm not a role model in any sense for them. What I've done with the podcast, what I've done with some of this activism of which you speak, makes it so I'm a bit of a lightning rod. I know for a fact, and my leaders have told me this. In fact, I met with an apostle who told me this. We don't care so much what you believe. It's just whether or not you make a big deal about it. The actual words that were used were, don't go and purchase a printing press, you know, if you have disbelief. You know, so what they're concerned about is that you sort of behave in the way that they need you to behave, which is attending church, staying active, paying your tithing, and doing those types of things. So anyway, having said all that, yeah, it's become kind of uncomfortable in my home ward. I think there are a few people who are happy to have me there, and there are also a few people who would probably like to see us go. And all politics can be local sometimes, so that will be a big factor. But
are you on the bubble?
Yeah, I'm on the bubble, and I wrote that about being a proud card-carrying, you know, buffet Mormon probably several years ago. Right now, I'm in a very painful place. Even though there's a lot of good that we still see in the church, and anything could happen, really, and I'm not eager to see it end, but I'm not so sure how it's going to end.
801-585-WEST, again, the number to join the conversation. Back to the phones. Rochelle is with us in Kaysville. Rochelle, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I just wondered if you could touch for a little bit on the reality of the consequences that people face when they leave the church, because I think a lot of true believing Mormons have the idea that it's just in your head, that if you leave the church, it's simply a matter of a change of belief, and it's really not. It's a life changing, life altering thing. In my life, I was counseled to get a divorce from my husband when he left the church. And I think those types of consequences are severe and real. And I wonder if you could just touch on the necessity for these groups of support for people because of those consequences.
Chandler?
Yeah, I think these groups, in some cases, to just use extreme language, I think they save lives. But I know they save marriages. I know they save familiar relationships. You know, when you leave a religion like Mormonism, you start with the psychological implications of losing your identity, of losing, you know, your moral compass. For some people, they struggle with that. You lose your community, your family, you can lose your marriage, and it can be catastrophic. And if you can just know that you're not alone, if you can just, you know, have a website you can go to share some questions or to commiserate with people or to get some tips or tricks, it can be the difference between you careening off, you know, a bank into a chasm or really ending up in a very happy, healthy situation. And so these support groups that you can find on Facebook, Mormon Stories has a bunch of Facebook groups that we link to, New Order Mormon, there's ex-Mormon support groups. They all are lifelines to people. And I'm so glad they're there.
Rochelle, thanks. 801-585-WEST, again, the number to join us. Back to the phones. David with us in Salt Lake. David, welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
My comment is this. Is there a stigma attached to you when you are discussing leaving the church with whatever authorities you might discuss it with? Or do you simply just leave and not discuss it with the authorities? Is there a stigma attached to you?
In terms of stigma, this is a really interesting thing about being a New Order Mormon. There's a verse in Revelation that basically says, the Lord says, I would that you be hot or cold, but if you're lukewarm, I'll spew thee out of my mouth. You know, it's very difficult to try and walk this middle ground or this middle way. You know, apologists and true believers and really conservative people will look at you if they know, if you disclose, they look at you as a wolf in sheep's clothing, as dangerous. And then those who have left the church who see you staying in, they say you're deceitful, you're selling out, you're being complicit in a fraud or in the harm of people. So there's stigma any way you slice it, and that's difficult. As far as the decision whether or not to discuss things with leaders, that's one of the real good pieces of advice on the New Order Mormon website. You should be careful what you tell your leaders. And I don't mean that in a way to be deceitful or deceptive, but a lot of them aren't trained in these issues. A lot of them aren't aware of the issues. And the more information you share with your leaders, sometimes the more rope you can give them to hang you with. And you want to sort of be in control of your staying or your exit and not cede that to someone who just doesn't really understand the issues in many cases. And I don't mean to disparage bishops. They're fine men. But they just don't get this stuff yet. And we're probably decades away from them really understanding.
David, thanks. 801-585-WEST, again, the number to join us. Here's an email from someone. I like this email actually a lot. Sorry, it's a Yeah, it is an email. This comment, anyway. This person writes, I have many friends who are progressive Mormons. I would consider myself an Orthodox Mormon. I respect and want to understand where my friends are coming from. However, I find it frustrating to be told that progressive Mormons are intelligent, deep thinkers, while Orthodox Mormons are lemmings who just have blind faith. I just need to vent a little frustration about the fact that those who consider themselves progressives also seem to consider themselves more intellectual than others. It's a good point.
It is. And I know that I always bump into this when I talk about these things, especially when I'm nervous or, you know, in a hurry. Certainly, you know, I as a psychologist, I conduct IQ tests. That's one of the things I do. I certainly don't believe that the average IQ of the average progressive Mormon is necessarily higher than the IQ of the average true believing Mormon or Orthodox. I do think I have observed in my experience that there's a certain level of commitment to truth and questions and skepticism and integrity that seems to be awarded to progressive Mormons more so than Orthodox. Now, of course, there are, you know, people like Richard Bushman or Terrell Givens or Fiona Givens or, you know, Claudia Bushman or others who know more than I do about the difficult issues of the church, who have asked more hard questions than me, that have withstood much more pain and suffering, and yet they still consider themselves believers. And I respect them. I acknowledge them. But I would just say there is something special about this 3 to 5%, again, in terms of their commitment to truth, integrity, skepticism, questioning, and their willingness to face hard things and to ask that question, what if it's not really what it claims to be? And I don't say that in a way to disparage anybody, because I think we need all sides, and there's virtues on all sides. But I do see some traits with this group that are unique on average.
Thanks very much. We need to take a break here. Let me take one more call, actually, before we get to a break. Gabriel's been waiting in Orem. Gabriel, welcome.
Thank you very much, Doug. I'm a big fan of your show. I just want to make a quick point. So I'm ethnically Jewish. I was raised by my grandfather, who decided that he would raise us as Buddhists. He wanted to abandon Judaism. As a teenager, I came in contact with the LDS Church, and I subsequently joined, served mission, married in the temple. I apologize if I'm the one who's being obtuse. I don't get it. I don't understand what the feelings of alienation are about. I think we're accountable and responsible for our own feelings and what we think. That may just be my Buddhist values, okay? I think that freedom of I just, as a member of the LDS Church, I don't feel anybody infringing upon my freedom of thought. I don't feel anybody. And it may be because I'm not from here, from Utah. It may be because I'm from another culture. I don't know, but I think I think people are accountable for their own thoughts. Again, I fall back to what my grandfather taught me and what the Buddhist community taught me, as far as accountability of feeling and accountability of thought. But if you choose something, if you choose not to believe, you're accountable for that, and you should expect things, fruit from that. Could be very good fruit. It could be very bad fruit. But there shouldn't I just don't get the pressure. I don't understand. And that's where I'm at. I just don't see it.
Do you want to say something about that, John DeLay?
I mean, I respect what Gabriel's saying. I love the teachings of Buddhism, and I try and follow them. Gabriel, if you don't understand why people feel pressure or coercion or feelings of alienation or frustration, then I would just respectfully suggest you spend some time doing a little more research. Go to MormonStories.org and listen to some of the stories there. Go to the exmormon.org website, read some of the narratives. These stories are harrowing and real, whether it's about the church's history being misrepresented, whether it's about gay, lesbian, and bisexual Mormons wanting to commit suicide because of the, you know, homonegativity that they experience, whether it's feminists who feel isolated or marginalized, whether it's scientists who feel invalidated and dismissed because of the beliefs they share. I acknowledge that there's something called ecclesiastical roulette, where it depends on who your bishop is, that there's ward roulette, where you could have a really affirming ward if you're in Berkeley, California, or Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I acknowledge that those pockets exist. And so I would validate your experience, Gabriel, but I would encourage you to spend a little more time reading about disaffection narratives so that you could understand that there are real credible reasons why people experience significant pain and suffering.
Gabriel, thanks. Here's something from Doug who wrote, I told my parents I no longer believe and they didn't take it well. Granted, tithing, church, and temple attendance all ceased as well, but I still do not drink or sin, in quotes, in other ways. Our relationship has changed on a fundamental level, which I figured it would. To them, to be good, a good person, it takes all of it, the belief, the do's, and the don'ts. Sure, they don't discriminate against most people who aren't Mormon, at least explicitly, but when it's their own child, they cannot see me as good any longer. Makes me sad. This from David, who writes, some of us who no longer consider ourselves Mormons still can't let go. I married into an established Mormon family. I converted, was pretty darned miserable for the dozen years that my marriage lasted. The day I left, I went down and had my first cup of coffee in 12 years, and it tasted so good. The problem, though, is I can't really cut the cord. A dozen years in Mormonism leaves an indelible mark on one's psyche. What I've done is regulated my diet of Mormonism to a manageable amount. I sip, and sometimes I have a hearty meal, but I never overeat. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West and Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about what some believe is a growing movement within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a group known by various names, among them New Order Mormons. John DeLynn is with us. He's co-founder of the website StayLDS.com, creator of the and one of the hosts of the Mormon Stories podcast. He's joining us here in the studio. Here's an email from Andrew, who writes, I left the church 7 years ago, and my life has improved tenfold, he says. I'm not convinced the culture of the church has much to add in terms of enriching one's life. Can John, you describe in detail what you actually gain from staying. Morals, community, support, they're all available outside the closed, judgmental community I left behind.
Andrew's right. I don't really consider myself an advocate for the stale DS path anymore. What I learned both through my own difficult experiences and through talking with many, many other people is that for many people, this middle path is really just a way station on the way to leaving. And I don't want to seal anyone's fate or discourage them from trying. But the truth is, it's very difficult to maintain this middle road, to bite your tongue continually, to feel like you're supporting things that are difficult. And
not sustainable?
For many, it's not. And I'm an advocate for people finding joy. And I believe Andrew when he says that he's found joy. And I think people should follow the joy.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. David is with us in Salt Lake. David, we don't have a lot of time, but welcome.
Hi. I would consider myself atheist agnostic. I'm active in the church, and I don't stick it in people's faces. But those I do have that conversation with, they're pretty accepting of me. And I've found that if you can get people away from feeling like they need to convince me to change my views, I've found that my views are really quite commonly held. So I would say high councilmen, people in the bishopric have similar views, which is it's impossible to really know.
But if you're an atheist, why are you going to a Mormon ward?
Because culturally I am LDS, whether I want to admit that or not.
Yeah.
I am. Yeah. And so that's just the people that I feel very comfortable with. Yeah. And you know, if I lived in Minnesota, I'd attend Catholic or Lutheran services.
Right.
But I live in Salt Lake City.
Right. You want to react to that, John DeLynn?
No, it's beautiful, and I'm glad that David feels supported. I've had bishops and members of stake presidencies and high councils reach out to me and say, I'm quietly not a believer, but I'm stuck in this bishop role. And some of the most touching and heartfelt experiences have been talking to these people. They're all over, and they're in every ward, and God bless them, you know.
Here's something from Chris, who writes, when we're interviewed for our temple recommend, we're asked if we associate with any group that is not in line with the teachings of the church. Now, this question they have for you, John, do you feel like your group or other new Mormon groups are one of those not in line groups?
You know, on the staleds.com website, there's an essay called How to Stay in the Church After a Crisis of Faith that I wrote with a good friend named Brian Johnston. And it talks about how to approach the Temple Recommend questions. I highly recommend it for those who are interested. You know, those questions are worded very broadly, and they allow you to interpret yourself. And I would just say that if we cannot be active members of the church because we affiliate with ex-Mormons or people who wish the church harm, none of us would be members because they're everywhere. They're everywhere in every family. And Christ encouraged us to reach out to the one. So, no, I certainly don't think that being on an internet board or being an uncorrelated Mormon or an association with them means that you can't have a Temple Recommend if your conscience allows you to. That's the big question, whether your own conscience allows you to answer those questions.
It kind of comes down to that, doesn't it?
It really does.
Your own sort of relationship with yourself.
And for years, I could do that.
Yeah.
But now I don't feel comfortable, so I don't seek a Temple Recommend right now.
David sends this. I'm an active member of my ward. I teach six-year-olds in primary. I would characterize myself as an agnostic. I have found that my views are not at all that unique in my ward. I found the LDS church members to be generally accepting as long as I'm not confrontational about it. I generally try to avoid the subject of religion while at church. Is that one of the keys? I mean, you just kind of have to keep quiet about it or be gentle.
Some try to be confrontational or vocal, and you either suffer or you learn to be quiet or diplomatic and to manage your capital very carefully.
Let me ask you this finally, less than a minute left. In one of those New Order Mormon blogs, someone wrote, it seems that the majority voice is that we're in a waiting room, something you mentioned, wishing we could leave but not able to because of work or family commitments. So I guess, is it a jumping off point in many ways? As you said before, it's not a very easy to anyway to sustain this kind of life, and many eventually are just going to go.
I'm gonna put that back on the leaders of the church. I think that a President Uchtdorf and the type of message he gives is going to keep more people in, but other types of messages can push people out. And I think that answer to that question is at the doorstep of the brethren. They can decide whether they want people like us or not, and the decisions they make and the things they say are likely going to be the tipping point for many people.
It's John DeLynn, creator and host of the Mormon Stories podcast, co-founder of the website stayLDS.com. John, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Doug.
We invite you to continue the conversation. Go on our website. You can comment there. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be talking about the politics of air pollution in Utah. You can go to the videowest.kuer.org to watch a short film which gives some impressions of downtown Salt Lake on a pollution-filled winter night. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.